Welcome to the Compliance Perspectives Podcast. I'm Adam Schultaub from the Society of Corporate Compliance and Ethics and Healthcare Compliance Association. Joining us today from Hanover, New Hampshire is Sid Finkelstein. Sid is a Stephen Roth Professor of Management at the Tuck School of Business at Dartmouth. Sid, thanks for taking the time to talk to us today.
Thank you, Adam. Great to be with you.
So for those of you who are unfamiliar with his work, he is the author of 20 books, including Why Smart Executives Fail, Think Again and Super Bosses, How Exceptional Leaders Master the Flow of Talent. And he's also the host of his own podcast series, The Sidcast. So Sid, let's dive right in on the conversation now. Your books, Why Smart Executives Fail and Think Again, are based on research that you did into the common factors into business failures, and certainly a compliance failure would be a business failure. One of the key factors is that a lot of decision making you found is not as rational as anyone thinks it is. People get caught up in visions, follow the wrong path, misread the signs. Are there lessons there for compliance programs into what factors easily lead executives astray, and you know what compliance people can do to prevent it?
Yeah, absolutely, Adam. The truth of the matter is that these types of breakdowns that I've studied all boil down to one fundamental thing, which is we're all people, and we sometimes stick our head in the sand. Sometimes we don't want to get feedback. Sometimes we allow the innate biases that everyone has kind of take control over us. So it's a very natural thing, and unfortunately, because of that, we have to really be on the alert all the time. And I think when it comes to compliance programs, there's no that's not going to be any different. I think we can assume that most people are going to try to do the right thing. There are always some bad apples out there, but my research shows that the bad apple theory is a real exception to the rule. It's much more likely that, you know, you make a mistake, you don't really want to get discovered, you don't pay enough attention, you don't have proper controls, you don't have the right culture, those types of things. And I would think all of those themes would apply to compliance programs as they would to really any other type of organizational process.
Yeah, it definitely has a lot of overlap with issues, but at the same time, you know, we've got also the problem that, you know, as you said, people tend to make a mistake and dig themselves a hole and then just keep digging deeper because they, you know, hate admitting that they're wrong or don't really want to admit what they've done. And one other factor that I think is one that's a big one is, you know, it's an ongoing challenge for those of us who work in compliance is that we're here to set limits or at least get everyone to understand what the risks are when making a decision and the limits that should go with it. It's not an unreasonable role, but often business people have very negative visceral reactions to it. Do you think that's going to be sort of par for the course and something we'll always have to live with, or is there a way to change mindsets around these things?
Yeah, well, people don't like limits until they realize what went wrong when they don't have those limits. So it's fighting the right battle. But you're asking about cultural mindsets, and I think there's a bunch of things that are possible. For example, there's a framing to this. You know, how do you frame as a compliance team or compliance officer what it is you're doing and why it's important? And yes, there are regulatory requirements, and yes, there are various policies, and they're in place. But I think being able to connect it to, you know, if only, and there's lots of stories in Why Smart Executives Fail that, and Think Again for that matter, that could be drawn on. If only, you know, Enron had paid attention to this. If only, you know, WorldCom had done that. Then I think you can get a little bit different story. What I'm really getting at is, everyone kind of operates under this idea that we're all rational and you know, we're all strategic thinkers and all the rest. And yeah, we might try to be, but it's in everyone's interest to recognize, as I alluded to earlier, that we have these foibles. And here's something that could help. And when you want to frame the engagement or the interaction, I think as a compliance officer or team, it's actually not a lot different than what any leader needs to do, which is you have to communicate that effect. There's an emotional side to communication, to leadership, And yeah, we're all rational, we're all strategic, but you got to appeal to people at a really fundamental level so they understand why it's so important to be partnering with you as members of a compliance team. And talking about what happens at places like, you go all the way back to Enron stories and others, but there's plenty of other examples as well, where you want to be able to, you want people to understand that something really could go wrong here, and that we're not just the bad guys here. We're not just here to put up all the barriers. In fact, we're the business partner that is going to enable you to be more successful by making sure that along the way you're much less likely to run into some of those gray areas that are gonna create a problem. And I'll say one other quick thing about this, which is, we have a startup culture that's everywhere in Silicon Valley, and I think it's made the problem worse. The Ubers, the Airbnbs, their philosophy has always been, well, let's break all the rules and worry about it later. And that's caused them some problems, but they've also established themselves as big companies. I think as that has permeated into what larger companies or more traditional companies are doing, it creates actually a bigger challenge for people in compliance, because you get into this kind of cultural milieu where, breaking the rules is okay. But the truth of the matter is breaking the rules is never okay. And it's in everyone's interest to not do so. And so being able to communicate and share as a business partner and at an emotional level, I think is going to pay off.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, certainly the ask for forgiveness later issue can really blow up on people. So let's move on from human frailties to human strengths and how to cultivate them. One of the areas you've also explored is what makes for great leaders, especially when it comes to developing talent within their organizations. That's an important issue for compliance officers since, unlike a lot of other professions, very few people have degrees in compliance. They tend to learn on the job, learn from their bosses. How can compliance leaders be most effective at leading their teams and growing the talent on it?
Yeah, this is that's the big question. And my work around what I call super bosses is an attempt to try to answer exactly that. And I think the key takeaway here is that every manager, any compliance officer, when you think about people on your team, you need to think about them as almost like you are a teacher, not just a mentor, which is a word that's thrown around a lot, but a teacher. And sometimes people say coach, and that's okay too. But a teacher is somebody who actually keeps helping the people on their team get better. They invest in them, they nurture them, they push them. They don't always treat them like with kid gloves. They challenge them, and the reason you do all of that is because, is there any world where if you as a leader do not make your team better, is there any world where that's where you make your team better, that's a bad thing? Sometimes people tell me, I don't have any time. I'm working like crazy and I don't have time to spend on my team. They need to figure it out themselves. And I understand where that comes from, but it's a very short-sighted answer, because again, the more capability that the more junior folks in your team have, the better they are, the more they're going to be able to take off of your hands, the better you're going to be able to perform, the more successful you're going to be. And so as opposed to, say, leadership development programs, which I'm active in that area, so it's not that it's a bad idea, but the greatest place where individuals learn how to get better at their job is during their one-on-one interactions, boss to team member. And every time you have an interaction, you want to consider it something that is a learning opportunity. And I'll give you a couple of quick specifics on that. The things you can do as a leader include conveying, believe it or not, a vision to your team on what their purpose is. I like to ask the question, why do you exist as a team? It's not just a job for a CEO to talk about a vision. I think it's a job for any manager, any leader that has people on the team. You got to give people a reason why this is important. You want to motivate them. You want to energize them to why this is critical. And I think if you do that, it's actually going to help with some of the challenges we talked about before. And one other quick quick tip or technique that I've used and have really advocated is to try to customize as a leader how you work with individuals on your team. It's not a one size fits all. Most of the time, people, when you think about your relationship with a boss, people will think, well, I have to accommodate to my boss. I gotta kind of fit into his or her way of working. And yes, of course, there's some of that, but wouldn't it be much more effective if a leader would actually think through what's the best way for each member of my team to get better, to perform, to produce what they need to do? Everyone's a little different when it comes to motivation. Everyone's a little bit different in terms of style. And the way, the way I think about it is, imagine if leaders would treat their team members the same way that companies treat their best customers. It would be a dramatic change in how teams develop. So those are some of the quick thoughts I have that I think could really be helpful in cultivating talent to get better.
I have to say I've actually lived that from the employee side. As you're telling this story, I remember working for someone who, when she took over the group from her predecessor, there was a period of, it was a little disconcerting at the time, when everybody on the team suddenly found some of the parts of their job taken away from them and given to others. And it took a while for all of us to realize, well, wait a minute, she's realigned everything, so we're doing what we're good at and not what we're bad at. And suddenly it became a much easier place to work and I think a much more productive team. You know, as you talk about this, it brings up to me an issue that's often troubled me in compliance. You know, a company gets a reputation for having a great compliance and ethics program. Everyone's benchmarking against it, and then the chief compliance and ethics officer moves on for one reason or another. And then it seems as if the program falls off the face of the earth, at least publicly. You know, within the organization, it may be just as strong, but we're not hearing anything about the great innovations and everything else that come out of it. How do you build, as a leader, a program that, you know, doesn't just survive after you've left, but thrives after you've gone?
Yeah, great question, and definitely a challenge. I think some of the things that I mentioned just before are going to be relevant. I think there's a mindset that says everyone in their any manager, certainly when you get to the level of a chief compliance officer or ethics officer, they presumably have other people in the team working with them. They need to make it their business to be training potentially multiple successors. And their goal should be to do this, to try to find people and help them get even better than they are. And that's the type of thing people might often say, and people scoff at it. It's scary, but the best companies will do that. I've interviewed hundreds and hundreds of executives that have worked for, you know, very strong super boss type leaders, and they learned tremendous amount. And the super boss leader, when he or she left, not always, but very often, left the organization in better shape, not worse shape. And the benefit is mutual. Not only does the company, where, say, somebody leaves, they can continue to be successful, continue to make a difference, but the reputation of that compliance officer, let's say the more senior person that is that leaves to go somewhere else, that reputation starts to go with her, starts to go with him. And the beauty of that is that they then find it easier to attract talent who want to work for them, who want to be part of their team, because they start to gain a reputation as this kind of talent magnet, this person that actually helps other people get better. So it has the potential to be a very virtuous circle of talent development, but it all starts with recognizing that the job of any manager, compliance or otherwise, has got to be to make sure that you're building potential successors that have the ability to be even better than you. And it's quite a hard target, it's quite a good target. But I've seen it, so I know that you can do it.
Yeah, I mean, it's every parent's goal, certainly, to have kids that are better than you. And extending that into the workforce is not a bad thing. So, you know, while we're talking about the next generation and kids, and let's talk about students. You spend a lot of time with them, obviously, as a professor. What are you seeing in their attitudes that compliance professionals and ethics officers should be prepared for?
Yeah, I think there is. There has been a big change. I've been working with MBA students, average age 28, for 25 years. So it's quite a range, and it's kind of the heart of the millennial generation now. And what I've seen is continuing and even accelerating focus on integrity, honesty, having the opportunity to have an impact. Caring about social issues, speaking out about public policy issues. These are the things that are starting to make a bigger and bigger difference. I've had conversations, for example, with students where they would, or let's call them alumni, after they've gone off and worked for a year or two, and they happen to come back, or I meet them somewhere, and they tell stories like, you know, I went to company X because they were known to have the highest ethical standards. They believed in sustainability or environmentalism or whatever it happens to be. And then I got there and discovered it wasn't true, they didn't walk the walk, they say, but they, you know, when push came to shove, they weren't there. They weren't backing it up. And they're already looking for a new job very, very quickly. So I think that the role of compliance professionals is going to be even more valued, at least judging by the generation coming through now, where the highest ethical standards really will mean something, maybe even more so than in earlier generations. And I think that's very good to know.
Yeah, it's very good to know, very encouraging. Well, Professor Finkelstein, thanks for taking the time to talk to us and share this very, you know, deep and practical insights. I want to thank all of you for taking the time to listen. I'm Adam Turteltaub from SCCE and HCCA saying, I hope we were able to expand your compliance perspective.